Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
Hello, Valerija.
Hi.
Disinformation is a plague of modern times, and we know in Latvia that quite well. But what does it mean during the time of war?
Obviously, the stakes are much higher. Disinformation can harm not only your well-being or health, can harm your emotions. There are situations when disinformation is a threat to people's life. It may sound strange for people not living in somewhere near front lines or in war conditions, and it sounded strange even for me several years ago, but now I understand that all false notifications about the evacuation corridors, about aid from different organizations, about shellings even, can harm life directly. The brightest example is the beginning of Russian full-scale invasion when Mariupol was occupied, and the information about green corridors for evacuation from the city changed not even daily, but in some hours. And there are stories when people tried to leave the city, but they appeared under shelling because they got wrong information about evacuation points.
What are the media you are checking, and what sort of disinformation do you confront the most?
In Ukraine, Telegram is the most popular source of news for people. So we mainly monitor Telegram channels, Russian and so-called pro-Russian. What we mean by pro-Russian, these Telegram channels, they try to show if they are Ukrainian. They publish news about Ukraine, but they are controlled from Russia. And we also monitor Ukrainian websites, Ukrainian Telegram channels, sometimes Instagram pages, also Facebook. So the whole informational space in Ukraine is influenced by Russia and Russian different actors. That's why I would say it's a complex monitoring of Ukrainian infospace. Disinformation is mainly connected with war, if to say in general. But I cannot say that there is one brightest topic, because Russians choose the most actual topics in their disinformation campaigns. And for example, when Ukraine had power outages because of Russian shellings on energy infrastructure, the most popular Russian claims concerned electricity. For example, that Ukraine is selling electricity abroad. And it may sound as just false claim, Ukraine is selling electricity, and someone from government is saying, no, we are not. But when people do not have electricity for 10, for 12, or 20 even hours per day, they start to believe such claims. And if they see that someone is posting that Ukraine is selling electricity while you are sitting at home without warm food, without water, and other communications, if your flat or house, if everything in it is connected with electricity, you start to believe this, because it's natural that in such conditions, people are more vulnerable to disinformation. Russians always try to use even small false claims to influence the public opinion about government, about Ukrainian authorities, and discredit them, to make people hate Ukraine in general.
Does Russia concentrate on, you know, those big, massive conspiracy theories, or they just go drop by drop, just dropping small disinformation one by one and just waiting for it to pile up?
I would say that Russia is using both strategies, because, yes, the main activity is to drop these small cases of disinformation, small fakes on different actual topics, like covering everything that is happening in the country. But on the other hand, there are so-called experts or big Telegram channels or media who publish analytics, or how they call it. They connect all these claims in different series, in big narratives, and the main aim of all these claims spread by Russia is to discredit Ukrainian government and to make people think that if Ukraine is occupied by Russia, it would be better for people to live here than under Ukrainian government. So some channels play the role of these garbage bins where all small fakes are published, and others try to influence public opinion not only by giving them some claims, but publishing explainers, analytics with right messages, right as they consider, to influence the public opinion.
We know that Russia has put millions into disinformation campaigns all around Europe, in Ukraine, of course, as well. Are you physically capable to stand against such amount of disinformation? And how many there are fact checkers in Ukraine? I guess VoxCheck is not the only organization in the country that does this work.
To be honest, it's hard even for a big amount of Ukrainian and European fact checkers and different NGOs to counter Russian propaganda. The best example to understand is conspiracy theories and people who believe in them. The same is a little bit applies for these Russian narratives. When you hear strange conspiracy theory, you have many details, many strange connections, interesting information. They may be false, but you have them. And when you try to oppose this conspiracy theory and give some serious facts without any interesting details, and it's hard to counter such theories, not connected even with war, but it's hard to make people believe in true information that may be not so interesting with not so many strange details. The same is with Russian disinformation, because disinformation attacks the most vulnerable groups of population and chooses the most vulnerable topics where truth may be not so visible, may spread not so quickly because it's more positive. Negative information is spreading faster. Taking into account all Russian budgets and a big Russian ecosystem of disinformation, it's hard work against it. In Ukraine, except VoxCheck, there are several big fact-checking organizations, StopFake and Gvara Media. They are also members of IFCN, International Fact-Checking Network. And we also have fact-checking organizations in different regions that work as departments of regional media. Also, we have two governmental centers, Center for Countering Disinformation, working under the Security Council, and Center for Strategic Communications, working under Ministry of Culture and Information Policy. These centers also debunk Russian propaganda as part of their work, have their own audiences, but unfortunately, disinformation is spreading much faster. Even doubling our efforts, we won't be able to produce so much true content, so much debunkings, as Russia is producing disinformation claims.
So then I must ask, what is the strategy of VoxCheck when you understand that you cannot debunk every piece of disinformation put out there by Russia or anyone else? And how do you spread your fact-checking results?
I would say we have two strategies, short-term and long-term. And our short-term strategy, it's even not a strategy to our short-term activity. We debunk false claims when we see them. We spread the true information, the debunking of false claims in our social media, in different Ukrainian media. We produce videos, work with Ukrainian public broadcaster. So we have some points of contact with different audience. But long-term strategy is more focused on pre-bunking on developing critical thinking and media literacy of Ukrainian audience.
How do you do that?
We try to engage with different actors and except publishing educational content in our social media, we started to work with different regional media. And the project with Google News Initiative, we organized trainings on fact-checking and a conference for representatives of regional media. We formed a network which includes media from all regions of Ukraine, and we understand that this regional media might have influence on audience that is not reading our social media, big national media, people that are interested only in life in their community and try to check news about weather or events near them. But if this media publish more explanations on Russian fakes, more main peculiarities of fakes, explain how to spot a fake, how disinformation works. If all these media reach their users, reach their readers, and teach them how to not be vulnerable to disinformation. Ukrainian population in general, from all these small communities, will be stronger to disinformation. So our role is more to like train the trainers, train regional media to let them work with their audiences and not spread fakes themselves, but teach people, teach their readers how to find reliable sources, where to find true information in other media or governmental institutions, and how to spot fakes, not to believe in them.
Right. Just a couple of weeks ago, you organized a special conference in Kyiv about fact-checking in regions with the help of Google News Initiative. How do challenges in regions differ from those that are on national level when we talk about fact-checking and false information and disinformation?
I think the biggest challenge for regional media now is funding, because there are a lot of regional media in different regions, in different cities and towns, and even villages or communities of these regions. There are many local media. Step by step, they are introducing this educational fact-checking content, but most of them, for example, depend on ads which they publish, and these ads may not be of the best quality. They also can include clickbait headlines and links to different websites. So here is a problem. These like high standards and work on big goals of media literacy is not very appreciated by readers, ordinary readers who want to find information about some accidents. For local media, it's very hard to engage grants because there are not so many grants as local media are. It's hard for them also to make this content interesting for audience, because national media can use some big national cases to explain something. They cover almost everything that is happening in the country on a bigger scale, but regional media focus on their local events, and for them, as we teach them on our trainings and also mentioned this on the conference, that local media should save their local context, because easier to teach people and to explain something for them if they understand the case about which media is writing. For example, if you give national case that was not very interesting for local audience and local audience just missed it, people won't understand what you want from them. But if you give an example from your community life of this small town and explain on this example how disinformation works, how, for example, some false claims were spread in this community, then people I teach remembering everything quickly, and they learn new on the basis of information they know.
if we talk about the regional challenges, I read the report on your webpage about that conference, and one quote stood out to me. Alexandra Novosel, a unit production manager at Sosplinek Kharkiv, said that often Russian disinformation isn't as frightening as local stupidity or mistakes. If you can comment on that, what do you think she meant by this?
Not every disinformation case is coming from Russia, and sometimes attempts to gain more views, to gain more audience, Ukrainian Telegram channels or not very reputable media are trying to spread some information first without checking it. And these local mistakes, yes, are harder to tackle, because if some strange news are coming from Russian Telegram channels, it's easier to explain people that it's fake, it's part of disinformation campaign, and Russia is using such tactics in this example. But if that comes from local media, it's harder to explain why they spread this. It's harder to explain readers why it is fake, because we, in general, say that we should trust Ukrainian, not Russian media. And when Ukrainian media or channels are spreading some fakes, it's a little bit harder to counter this for local audience.
And now I come to a question that is guiding our conversation maybe to local politics. There are people who are talking about media in Ukraine being under pressure from different sides, including president's office. When you do your fact-checking, do you also put attention to those big media, the national media, and are you free to do so? Do you face consequences if you do so?
We never had such situations, and we are free to fact-check anything. But here is the thing that we understand the so-called red line between freedom of speech and national security. And many foreign experts, foreign organizations mentioned that, for example, even closing Russian channels, it's violating freedom of speech. Maybe in peaceful conditions, it could be viewed like that. But when you have direct Russian threat, physical threat from Russian army, Russian missiles, it's a question of national security, whether you let people watch Russian news. And the same is with fact-checking. Sometimes there can be cases when we understand that a fact-check may bring more harm to Ukrainian audience than, for example, provide some useful insights for them. When we talk about sensitive topics like shelling, like peaceful plans, we cannot comment on everything, and we have to understand that criticizing Ukrainian government on every step they do will lead to our defeat, because now we have still, we have to be united with our government, the whole population, because we have one big threat, Russia. And when we talk about some corruption cases, about different scandals in governmental institutions, if there is a claim to fact-check, we can do this. But in general, mostly these claims are not fact-checkable, because they are just scandals or some rumors from the political life. But if we have what to fact-check, we can do this. And we never had some like conflicts, public or private, with governmental institutions. But as I mentioned, we have to control our red lines, because, for example, sometimes commenting on shelling can influence the whole image, perception of the results of the shelling, and we may harm by spreading this information. If we comment more on actions of Ukrainian authority, we can also make mistakes, so we avoid some critical comments from our side, because first of all, it's not part of fact-checking, and secondly, we don't know the whole context. The principle of fact-checking is working with open sources. In most cases, when it concerns some political statements, points concerning the political life of Ukraine, we don't have the full picture to be able to comment independently and to give some our insights, some our thoughts, as we are not part of this process. It's better to avoid commenting situations when you are not 100% sure in information you will say.
Your colleague Maxim Skubenko, executive director of Vox Ukraine and junior sergeant of the army, said that fact-checking is a bit like philosophy, as there are no clear-cut answers. You can check numbers and find the original statement, verify if the speaker's words were twisted. But if you think more broadly, how do you verify a claim about total corruption in Ukraine, let's say? Or can you criticize the government during the war? And if so, where is the line that separates state interests in a warring country? Sometimes fact-checking is about asking yourself questions that you'd rather not answer. I'm aware that I wouldn't find answers to some questions, but I keep asking them because our victory and future in this country depend on it. So basically, that's what you were talking about yourself as well. But are you not afraid that basically what you just were speaking about could be seen as some sort of self-censorship?
I think it is self-censorship, but in so-called good understanding of censorship, because as Maxim mentioned from this quote you just read, we have to decide on which warring side we are, and we have to live in this country after the war ends. So we need to understand that checking some statements is not appropriate, that criticizing government is not appropriate in some cases, because there are cases criticizing government is necessary. When the public discussion is very hot and you cannot miss this case, you have to comment on everything that is possible. But sometimes there are cases when it's not okay to publish this information, to comment on it, to make it more public for broader audience, because it may bring more harm. We have enough cases to comment that are not so dangerous for national security. That's why we need to ask ourselves what consequences will have the publication of each article we are producing. Will it bring more use or more harm for Ukrainian audience? Because if we do not do this self-censorship, we may cross the lines, and then reuniting Ukrainian audience, Ukrainian population, and returning trust in Ukrainian state would be harder.
Let me tell you a story from my own experience from just a few days ago. I tweeted about the investigative report by team of Ukrainian investigative journalists from NGL Media about the horrible quality of food Russians sent to Ukrainian army units. I tweeted about that, and one of my followers just seconds later tweeted back at me asking, is publishing that kind of information that puts a bad light on some parts of Ukrainian army or government, is not something like a Kremlin propaganda? And that's a very good question, basically. How much can you talk about negative sides, and how much do you need to talk about those for them to be changed and for country to become better? And see, this is here in Latvia. We, of course, follow you and we support you. But time to time, there are these stories that I think it's important to talk about them for system to get better and for Ukraine to come out of the war a better country, a better society. Even if in Latvia we have these discussions, I imagine in Ukraine, that's 100 times a hotter topic, and how to talk about those problematic aspects of governing country during the wartime. it's even much harder, right?
Yes, it's very hard topic, but in such cases, we need to understand that food for Ukrainian armed forces, that clothing, for example, winter uniform, all the things they get, all the supplies should be of the highest quality, because if they do not have enough supplies, if they have bad food, if they don't have suitable clothing for winter, for example, it's question of their survival. And the question of their survival is question of survival of whole Ukraine, of the regions not on the front lines. So here we understand that the life of every soldier is having the highest price, our top priority. Uncovering such cases will bring more positive consequences, because if we talk about bad food, it will become better, because after this scandal, checking of food quality will become better. That's why it will directly influence the life of soldiers and make their basic needs closed on better level. The same, I would say, communication problem, communication so-called dilemma we had. Maybe you also heard about scandal with Ukrainian family who supplied armed forces with uniform. It was several months ago. They both, father and son, they both are under investigation, and it was a major corruption scandal about the prices of tenders on this clothing. But here the main point in communication was that despite the fact that some officials or some high-level people in different institutions who are not on the front lines, who just decide something on contract senders, who sit somewhere in Kyiv or even in other cities closer to the West, to the peaceful West, these people are not part of Ukrainian armed forces who directly protect us. Yes, this corruption scandal is a little bit harmful for the trust in Ukrainian government, but in general, the main focus is that those protecting you on the front lines are not guilty, that people in their back, that people in on higher levels trying to earn more money. So please do not stop supporting by your donations, sending help directly to people, different hotspots, and they have some needs that are covered by volunteers or by bigger foundations, but also that work with voluntary donations from people. So here is direct division in communication strategy, that soldiers of Ukrainian army are protecting you. People on higher levels, some of these officials are corrupt, and we need to uncover them and change them on someone more professional, on someone working towards interests of Ukrainian army to make the conditions for soldiers better, not to steal money from the state, just people with good reputation. So these scandals are very harmful, but in the same time, they are very, making big progress in some aspects. They are making difference. They are helping to make faster changes. Some of these changes are painful, but the result is faster and better. Because, like I mentioned, if we talk about food or clothing, how painful these scandals are for higher officials, it's more painful for soldiers to suffer from this lack of basic needs from the state. And if we talk about it publicly, we get the chance to improve their conditions faster.
When we want to know what's really happening in Ukraine, what would be your tips for us to not fall victims to disinformation when consuming news from Ukraine?
In general, you shouldn't read Russian news at all. So the first and the main rule is to read trustable sources. For example, we have Kyiv Independent. It's Ukrainian media that is mainly working for foreign audience and publishing its content in English. So the main news can be found there. Their website is updating regularly. They also have social media where all the hottest topics will be discussed. Also, you can follow European trustable sources, follow the statements of Ukrainian officials, also presented in these sources with higher standards. In 90% of cases, this reports on events in Ukraine will be true, will show everything as it is without manipulations and so on. Also, there is Ukrainian so-called white list of media that is formed annually, and if your reader, so you can understand some information in Ukrainian, it's great to follow big national media that are in this list, and sometimes even read two or three publications and choose the media you like the most, and of course compare the news in this media and make your own conclusions.
Now, reading in Ukrainian is no problem thanks to Google Translate and other services. So where we can find the list?
You can just Google white list media Ukraine and you will have a link to a list of media from Institute of Mass Information. They form this list annually. And just check, some of these websites have English versions, but they are not updated so regularly. So I would recommend make the main focus on Kyiv Independent. And also Radio Liberty, Ukrainian division, they also publish regularly and have good coverage on everything that is happening in Ukraine.
During your time checking different disinformation, have you encountered Latvia's name popping up in some fake news?
I can't remember any bright cases, and nothing so big comes to my mind that I think is positive, because in general, we know that Latvia and your neighboring countries also support us a lot. And we understand that even if something comes from Latvia, this would be some strange media or journalists that are also working with Russia, but this will be never accepted as official position or as source of Latvian people, because we understand the level of support you give us. Unfortunately, I had not a chance to visit Latvia, but I hope that will happen in nearest future. But I was in Lithuania and Estonia, and to be honest, in Vilnius, I saw more Ukrainian flags than I can spot in my hometown in Ukraine. I talked with many people and they are so supportive towards Ukraine that we will never consider some disinformation even coming from someone from Latvia as an offense to Ukraine, because the support is so huge. We understand that the Baltic states are not big countries comparing with different European countries, but as we see, you all do the most you can to support us, and it's really very valuable for us, because on the third year of full-scale invasion, not everyone is talking about Ukraine, and it's obvious, but we understand that support is still high. It gives us also more strength fight on in different areas, to understand that someone is supporting you, that you are not alone in the whole world.
You definitely are not. We're with you. But please do fact check even the information coming from Latvia. Better safe than sorry. The last thing I wanted to ask you, yes, you mentioned it's the third year of war. Of course, generalizations are never 100% correct, but has Ukrainian public gotten smarter in recognizing fake information? How do you see it?
I would say that in general, yes, because beginning of full-scale invasion, almost from every media, every channel, even people in their conversation were mentioning fakes, like fakes, fact-checking, putting disinformation became very discussed among people. And sometimes I even see comments from real people or here when they discuss some news, they ask, isn't it Russian fake? So they are aware that our informational space is filled with fakes, with Russian disinformation, that Russia is trying to influence it. But we have a lot of work to do because Russian manipulations and tactics are changing. They also adapting to the situation, and they understand that some very so-called cheap fakes, for example, bad-made deep fakes with Ukrainian politicians, will be easily recognized by Ukrainian audience. So they try to create more complex fakes, to use more difficult topics, complicated cases, because it's harder for ordinary people to recognize them. Like, we are playing is not the right word here, but we are having this step-by-step complication when Russia is making fakes more complicated. Ukrainian audience is more aware about them and understands more tactics, more propaganda statements. Then Russia is complicating more, and we are one more time trying to teach our audience what is new, what tools were used, why is it fake, because it's not so obvious. So we have these turns in tackling disinformation, and unfortunately, disinformation will become more and more complex because Russians are following very precisely what is happening in Ukraine and choosing the most vulnerable topics.
All right. Thank you so much, Valeria.
Thank you.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
Paldies Dīvam par sarunu ar Valēriju Stepaņuku, VoxCheck vadītāja vietnieci. Ļoti interesants temats par dezinformāciju, daudz runājam. Tostarp arī ziņās senāk par to stāstīt, nu jā, mēs, man liekas, Baltijā, Polijā un citvietu šeit reģionā kopumā labi saprotam, kas ir Krievijas dezinformācija, un te mums pat ir ko mācīt arī rietumpartneriem, bet, nu, tajā pašā laikā jau jāatzīst, ka nav tā, ka arī mūsu sabiedrība, diemžēl, nu, būtu pilnībā imūna pret vildu ziņām, un ja tur tāda kvalitatīvi nostrādāta dezinformācija plus, tad nevienmēr var veikli to atkost, un pat profesionāļiem nevienmēr tas uzreiz acīgi izdodas.
Tas ir skaidrs. Interesanti arī redz, ko Valērija stāstīja par to, ka Ukrainas sabiedrība tomēr arī, tā teikt, aug līdzi un kļūst izglītotāk, droši tāpat arī kā mēs šeit Latvijā, bet, nu jā, man visvairāk tā aizķēra un lika pārdomāt mūsu tā sarunas daļa, kad mēs runājām par šīm te sarkanajām līnijām un šīm te dilemām. Arī tas jau, kā es teicu, arī intervijā, un tā ir bijis nereiz vien, kad tu domā vai kaut ko teikt, vai, piemēram, tur retvītot, vai kaut ko arī drošinātājā runāt par tām ziņām, kas nav īpaši iepriecinošas saistībā ar korupciju Ukrainā un tamlīdzīgi un tā joprojām. Pastāv viedoklis, ka arī viens no mūsu klausītājiem rakstīja, ka, nu kā, runājot par to, ka Ukrainā ir korupcija, mēs pūšam Maskavas stabulē, jo šādām runām izplatoties samazinās rietumu partneru vēlme atbalstīt Ukrainu ar dažādu palīdzību. Otrs piegājiens, kā pieiet šai korupcijas tēmai, ir tāds, ka ja valstī runā par korupciju, tas nozīmē, ka tā netiek paslaucīta zem paklāja, par to tiek runāts, kaut kas tiek, nu, teiksim tā, cerams, tiek darīts lietas labā. Protams, cik daudz tiek darīts un cik daudz mēs uzzinām, tas ir cits jautājums, bet, nu redz, šo te sarkano līniju atrašana un pašcenzūra, tas, protams, ka nav tas vienkāršākā lieta, bet acīm redzot droši vien, ka tas ir kaut kas tāds, kas ir jādara, savukārt mums sekojot līdz tam, ko mēs dzirdam no Ukrainas, ir jāņem vērā arī šis faktors.
Jā, nu man liekas, te jau arī uz otru pusi, tā teikt, tas viss aiziet, nu tu minēji, ka pūšana Kremļa stabulē, ja mēs publicējam vai runājam par kaut ko, kas Ukrainā no kārtībā, Nu, tad jau varētu droši vien arī domāt, ka, nu, redzi, pret Krieviju ieviestas ir sankcijas, vai ne? Nav jau viss spīdoši tādā ziņā, ka, nu, nav tā, ka viss strādā, diezgan daudz, kas nestrādā, un Krievijai daudz, kas diemžēl, bet izdodas, nu, un ja mēs runājam par to, ka Krievijai tomēr daudz un veiksmīgi izdodas tās sankcijas apiet, nu, tad jau tajā ziņā mēs arī pūšam Kremļa stabulē un paspodrinam to tēlu, ka, nu, redz, rietumiem nekas nesanāk, bet Krievijai viss izdodas.
Starp citu, es te vairākas nedēļas jau skatos uz datiem, bet man bišķiņ biedē tas datu apjoms un negribas būt neprecīzam, bet viena no tēmām, un tu varbūt man pasaki ziņās, jūs cik daudz par to runājat, ka tu sakredzi, piemēram, ka Krievijai izdodas apiet sankcijas, jā, bet daudzos gadījumos Krievijai nebūtu iespējams apiet sankcijas, ja, piemēram, rietumu pusē, tagad nerunāsim par globāliem dienvidiem, piemēram, vai par Irānu vai par Ziemeļkoreju, kur rietumu vērtības uzskati un sankcijas nestrādā varbūt tik daudz, ja, bet parunājot par rietumiem tieši, ka šīs sankcijas strādā daudz labāk, ja rietumu pusē nebūtu uzņēmēji vai uzņēmumi vai vēl kaut kas, kas neskatoties uz sankciju draudu turpina sadarbību ar Krieviju, un tas vislabāk izpaužās divos, man liekas, veidos. Tā kā mēs redzam, piemēram, ir notriekts kaut kādas Krievijas jaunās svaigi ražotās raķetes vai kaut kādi ieroči un tam līdzīgi, un tur mēs redzam šīs te rietumu komponentes, ja? Un otrs ir, ja mēs paskatāmies uz rietumu valstu eksporta apjomu, tā ir skaitā Latvijas, eksporta apjomu uz tādām valstīm kā Gruzija, Kirgistāna un tas reģions. Skaidrs, ka ir runa par reeksportēšanu tālāk, kad preces it kā tiek nogādātas uz Kirgistānu un pēc tam no tām turienes tiek pārvestas uz Krieviju. Jā, valdības mēģina ar šo cīnīties, bet nu, mēs redzam, ka ne līdz galam tas pagaidām ir izdevies.
Jā, nu, protams, tie caurumi ir ne tikai Kazahstānā, apvienotajos Arābu Emirātos, Turcijā, Indijā vai citur, bet tepat jau pie mums arī rietumos un Eiropā, un to mēs paši sev atgādinām, bet ne tik ļoti veiksmīgi tiekam ar to joprojām galā.
Un redz, ka mēs paši tagad sev necenzējam, nesenāk mēs tikko runājam par pašcenzūru Ukrainā, tagad mēs bezmazēj pašcenzūru šitiem pat mūsu drošinātājā. Kaut vai šis te gadījums ar mangānu rūdas eksports savu Rīgas ostu?
Jā.
No ko? Tad mēs varam gaidīt, rādīt uz pirkstiem viens uz otru, bet ja mēs paši nesperam kaut kādas soļas, negaidot uz citiem, tad arī notiek tas, kas notiek. Labi, tagad redz, tad, kad kāds atklāja šo informāciju un sabiedrība sāka sašus, tad ātri vien redz izrādās, ka var kaut ko darīt un nav jāgaida uz citiem. Bet nu jā, aizfilozofējāmies, Rihard, mēs ar tevi te, ne?
Ui, riktīgi.
Jā.
Bet tev vēl ir pāris lietas, par ko tu gribēji pafilozofēt, man šķiet, ne?
Vēl es gribēju pafilozofēt, nē, jā, divas ļoti ātrās lietiņas. Viens ir, es gribu pacelt cepuri to izsili gudro cilvēku priekšā, kuri 2020. Gadā izlēma, ka 183 tūkstoši eiro jāiztērē vienu kāpurķēžu bruņmašīnas uzlikšanai uz postamentu pie ādažu bāzes. Te uzreiz gan ir jāuzcars tie, kuri trako par šo ziņu, ka tas nav bijis tā, ka kara laikā tagad mēs nevis izdomājam sūtīt Ukrainai palīdzību par 183 tūkstošiem, bet tas jau ir bijis 20. Gadā kaut gan. Nu, 20. Gadā acīm redzot kādam, kurš šo pieņēma lēmumu, un šādiem lēmumiem vienmēr ir vārds un uzvārds, šķita, ka jā, visi principā mierīgi, un mēs esam gana droši, lai mēs varētu izskaistināt teritoriju ap ādažu bāzi. Nu ko, ir vilku pārdomām. Protams, ka tagad kara apsākļos ir pavisam citu uztvere, izmeklēšanas sāks un tā tālāk, vai tagad būtu vērts kaut ko tur sagraut, nu naudu jau iztērēt, diez vai. Bet tas, ko es gribēju īpaši uzsvērt mūsu klausītājiem un gribēju vaicāt tev arī, Rihard, es teiktu tā, ka nākamā nedēļa, nu, nē, nākamās 10 dienas, bez notikumiem Ukrainā, es ļoti aicinātu pievērst uzmanību arī tam, kas notiek Moldovā un Gruzijā. Moldovā, kā zināms, 20. Oktobrī notiks referendums, tātad neiedziļinoties detaļās, bet par tā teikt valsts virzību Eiropas Savienības virzienā, un savukārt 26. Oktobrī Gruzijā ir, nu šķiet, kā visi eksperti saka, izšķirošās vēlēšanas Gruzijā, kur ja pie varas paliks esošā valdība, tad tur viņi jau principā īpaši neslēpjot ir solījuši tur raganu medības, un tur mēs varētu redzēt strauju Gruzijas virzību, teiksim tādā Baltkrievijas stila nedemokrātijā, Tā kā abās šajās valstīs ir ļoti iesaistīta arī Krievijas spēlvainā roka ar taiskaitā dezinformāciju, par kur mēs runājām, taiskaitā ar kaut kādiem finanšu līdzekļiem, jo Krievijas interesēs, protams, ka nav šo abu valstu virzīšanās uz Eiropu. Tāpēc, jā, es aicinu noteikti sekot līdzi, un mēs arī noteikti, ka pievērsīsim tam uzmanību. Un, Richard, kas notiekās ar Latvijas radio ziņdienas plāniem? Es saprotu, ka tu pats arī dosies uz vienu no šīm valstīm.
Jā, nu šim mēs, protams, sekosim līdzi, kā jau to dara daudzās valstīs, un jā, mēs dosimies gan uz Moldovu, atspoguļot šīs vēlēšanas, un tur notiekošo arī referendumu par virzību uz Eiropas Savienību, un pats došos jau nākamajā nedēļā arī uz Gruziju, un arī tur jau vēstīšu, kāds tad tur noskaņojums uz vietas, un, protams, to aktuālo, kā tad risinās notikumi gan vēlēšanu laikā, gan, nu, paskatīsimies, kas tad notiks arī pēc tām. To visu jau klausieties radio ēterā.
Drošinātāji ēterā tu būsi nākamnedēļ?
Būšu, es nekur nebūšu pazudis. Es vēl paspēšu ar tevi aprunāties pirms došos prom.
Ok, sarunāts. Labi, tātad sekojam līdzi notikumiem Moldovā šajā nedēļas nogalē, pēc tam nedēļa vēlāk Gruzijā. Protams, ka sekojam līdzi tam, kas notiek Ukrainā, nepaļaujamies dezinformācijai, un ja jums ir savs viedoklis un gribat, ko mums teikt, un varbūt gribat, lai mēs uzdodam jautājumu Kristīnē, vai gribam, lai jūsu viedokli publiskojam šeit, kā varbūt citu viedokli nekā, ko mēs te runājam, tad rakstiet mums, vislabākais veids sazināties ar mums ir rakstot uz e-pasta adresi drošinātājs@latvijasradio.lv. Šai reizei tas arī viss, jauna epizode, kā vienmēr katru ceturtdienu raidierakstu platformās un Latvijas radio mobilajā lietotnē. Savukārt tiem, kuri nelieto šādus informācijas avotus, tiem sakiet, ka mūs var dzirdēt nedaudz tādā kompaktākā versijā piekdienu vakaros 6:15 Latvijas radio pirmajā kanālā vai programmā, kā saka radio.
Pirmajā kanālā,
tad viss kārtībā. Labi, tas arī viss. Paldies, Richard, paldies, klausītāji, uz tikšanos nākamreiz.
Visu gaišu un atceramies drošinātājs skaidri un personīgi par karu Ukrainā.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs.